The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness.
All aboard!
Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Diver Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 68. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here with me, Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Victor, I'm great. We're recording this on August 5th, and that is the same date that the Hlinka tournament starts. So getting a head start, the starting gate for the 2025 NHL draft. And as we're speaking, USA is playing a game on the TV right behind me. Excuse me. I think they're playing Czechia. Yeah, so hockey's back, man. It's like it never left. We had the World Junior Summer Showcase, and we're going to have Steve Ellis on in an episode in a week or so to kind of give us his briefing on how that tournament rosters are going to shape up. And then before you know it, the junior leagues and NCAA and USHL, they'll all be starting in about a month's time. So that's pretty exciting. I like hockey. How about you, man? What's new?
Yeah, that's a good reminder. I've been watching a lot of Olympics, but it's a good reminder to throw on the summer hockey, which is always a good time. The other thing we have going is we got some drafts coming up. A lot of our listener leagues has our draft coming up. We were just talking about that. And actually, I keep forgetting to mention, but we do have a couple of spots open if you're interested in joining the leagues that we drafted last summer. Almost everyone stuck around, but a couple people decided that it wasn't quite the format they wanted. So feel free to reach out if you're interested. It's a head-to-head dynasty league with most normal categories: goals, assists, shots, special teams, hit blocks, takeaway, giveaway, face-off wins. Those are also categories. And then there's the typical goalie categories. And I think it's 25 US to join. And it's a good time. I think it's 16 team. Yeah, no, 18 teams. So
yeah, three different leagues with 18 teams. We started it last summer with little expectation, like hoping that we'd be able to fill up an 18 team league. And we got so much feedback that we had to like have our own leagues and split it up. And we should make it like a tiered dynasty or something like you guys do on FHL or Keeping Carlson. It's a fun league, though. It's fun to compete against guys like you and me, too. I didn't do as well as you did in our initial year. I'm a little disappointed with the Kingston Raiders result, Victor. I'll have to sharpen my pencil for the upcoming draft that's coming up here and get it together. I dare say a reputation to uphold.
Yeah,
or establish.
Because
let's start
us,
with that.
One of us won the first season. That would be me. And Clay as my co-GM. So yeah, it's a good time. You do have a reputation to establish because I think you were kind of in the fat middle the first season.
Yes, the murky middle. I didn't get a good draft and I didn't win. So like I finished the worst.
It could be okay if you're trending in the right direction, but I haven't looked at your team. I'm not sure which way you're headed. The worst is to get stuck there. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Stuck in the middle. Anyway, so reach out to me if you want to join that. I say that because he won't know what to do with it if you reach out to him.
Sure, I would. Pass it along to you.
Exactly. All right, so in today's report, we're going to continue our organizational ranks. Pete mentioned that in a week we're going to take a break and talk about the World Summer Showcase, but for today we're going to talk about organizational ranks 16 through 11. And that's going to be a good time. Some getting to some better teams with some interesting prospects. Before we do that, we want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. Use the DraftKings promo code THPN. Listen to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host the show, host the draft, draft pick trading, treasury option, and so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. All right, starting off this list of 16 through 11, we start with a relatively obscure team, Pete, that you happen to follow. Who's that?
Well, 16th ranked organization would be the Toronto Maple Leafs, Victor. Their score was a 70.6, and they had a really good prospect pool a few years ago, and a lot of their players graduated: Marner, Nylander, Matthews, yada yada yada. And they've been finishing pretty high in the standings for the last few years, but they continue to do a pretty decent job of drafting and finding guys late in the first or second round. That's at the time they're drafted, some people are like, I don't know, but they turned out to be actually quite astute picks. And then they've also had a couple of late round picks that are showing a lot of potential as well. Big fans of the Russian players are the Leafs scouts. So their top prospects. Number one, we got Matthew Nyes, is ranked a 7.4, and he's going to be graduating after this season. You got Nick Robertson and Easton Cowan tied at 6.7, and Nick Robertson's asked for a trade, so he might no longer be on this list next season either. And right behind them is Fraser Minton. Cowan and Minton, a couple of really good prospects I'm really keen about there. Joseph Woll comes in at 5 at a 5.7, and he's obviously going to be graduating as well, as he's expected to be the starting goalie this year. And then tied with him is Topi Niemelä. Dennis Hildeby comes in right after that. And then now you're getting to the bottom of the top 10. It starts to fade out a little bit and get into some of the more obscure guys: Ryan Tevberg, Nikita Grebenkin, Nick Abbruzzese, Ronnie Hirvonen, and so on and so on. So let's talk about some of the lower ranked guys, because I think there's been a lot of ink spilt and keys typed about the top end, and most of those guys are going to graduate anyways. So the players that I think the listeners want to hear about are guys like Ryan Tevberg. He's ranked 8th, and he scored a 4.6. I was one of his highest rankers. He got a 6 from myself and Pat. Victor, you also are kind of keen on this guy. You scored him a 5, as well as Curtis Ben and Panit. He got some low scores though, brought him down. 4s from Dauber, Aaron, and Mark and Hayden. So Ryan Tevberg, I looked him up in the Dauber Prospects report, which is available for sale now. And this is what Curtis wrote about him, and I think it really sums it up quite nicely, Victor. He's the 22-year-old, can play as a crash and bang forward, but has also learned to play as an offensive driver, attacking the inside of defenders and finding high danger passing lanes. Tevberg may not be the most dynamic offensive player, yet his tool set makes him arguably the most translatable player in the system. He can play in all situations, allowing him to be comfortable in various roles. As he grows more comfortable, do not be surprised to see the Maple Leafs call him up and get some games in the bottom six. He had 32 points in 46 AHL contests last season, and it's nothing outstanding, but his actual play on the ice game to game is what makes him so valuable moving forward. So, like I said, I think this articulates my thoughts on Tevberg nicely. He's a versatile player. He'll carve out a role in the NHL one way or another, either as a bottom six role player, or as a more fantasy relevant offensive player. And I think the smart money here is on the former. I'm not sure how much offensive upside he has. He scored nicely at the lower levels that he's been in the NCAA, and as a rookie in the American Hockey League, he scored well as well, but nothing prolific. 32 points in 46 games is very good, but it's not like, whoa, make space for this guy. He was just under a point a game player in his final two seasons in the NCAA as well. So he played three seasons there. His freshman season was not great. In the guide as well, Curtis compares his upside to Brian Rust. I think that's a pretty down-to-earth comparable, a pretty down-to-earth player. With a point projection of, averaging about 40 points per season, with the best case scenario, if all things break right for him, maybe 60 points in a season. He gives him an upside of 10%, but his NHL certainty is much higher at 75%. So I kind of that's my sort of take on Ryan Hepperberg. Victor, do you have anything to add to him?
Well, it's kind of funny that he mentioned Brian Rust, which, by the way, great write-up by Curtis. Really gives you a good sense of what to think about him. It's interesting looking at hockey prospecting for Rust, who was also pretty much a gigantic long shot, who ended up being kind of a very valuable fantasy asset, at least at times. Although I'm old enough to remember Brian Rust being kind of a replacement level, boring, never going to make it kind of guy, and then he just turned into this really amazing player. It seemed like all of a sudden, which was kind of funny, like we all kind of thought he was just another third wheel with Crosby, and then all of a sudden it was like, no, he's actually really good, and that's kind of where he is now. So, could Tevberg be that guy? I don't know. It does seem like a long shot just based on his equivalencies, but he certainly does seem more likely just based on his recent performance and not his longer track record. Yeah, that AHL performance, quite good. I'm always a little skeptical when it happens a little bit later, as a he was
Right.
21, 22, but that's not so old. It's not like he's 25 dominating the AHL, and it was his first crack at it too. So that also means a little bit. So yeah, I think he's kind of in that in-between range where he probably ends up being just kind of, near replacement level, but there's potential upside for a little bit more. And it's nice to kind of take a gamble on those guys that are pretty close, and could kind of go either way. So I like him. As you said, that's why my score was a little bit kind of more in the middle, not as high as you, but not as low as some of the other guys.
I scored him just over a five, and a five being like 50-50 to make it to the NHL. So kind of in line with the 75% certainty, but also in line with the 10% upside. Like I'm pretty certain he's going to get some opportunities to play in the NHL. Not as optimistic about him turning into a 60-point player, but like Brian Rust, if you playing with Sidney Crosby, if Tevberg can play with Matthews or even Tavares, that could really help inflate those stats if he gets inside the top six there. Yeah, the Leafs. Okay, the next player. I mentioned that the Leafs have dipped into the Russian prospect pool a couple of times, and the ninth ranked prospect in their system is Nikita Grebenkin, or if you go phonetically by the Russian spelling, Grebyonkin. I'm not sure what the correct pronunciation is on this name, Victor. I've heard it both ways from different places. Do you have any thoughts on the correct pronunciation?
I've heard that the Russian players prefer the Grebyonkin, like the with the YO, and the
Right.
anglicized version is without the Y, but I don't know enough Russians, and I don't know him to know whether that's what he prefers. So I tried to look it up. I couldn't find any definitive answer, but it seems like both are acceptable.
Well, he's come to North America, so when he's in Belleville, maybe I'll go and I'll interview him and I'll ask him, how do I say your last name, buddy? So he's the ninth ranked prospect, like I said. His score was an average of 3.9, and he got high scores of six from Curtis, the Dobber Prospects Leaf prospect writer, very in tune with him. Pat scored him a six as well, and he got low scores of not being ranked by Ben or Punit. Victor, you and I were kind of more in the middle here. You scored him a five and I scored him a four. So surprisingly, he was not scored by two of the writers, as I mentioned, which, for a guy that scores a six from some guys and a zero from others is a little bit polarizing and sort of illustrates how underrated this player is, which, quite frankly, is impressive to be underrated when you've been drafted by the Leafs. A lot of people like to talk about Leafs players and prospects. As I mentioned, he is coming to North America to play in the American Hockey League this season. So hopefully that should change the narrative around his profile soon when Leaf fans get a look at him, and maybe he can start to create some buzz. So he is a forward. He played 20 as a 20-year-old in the KHL and posted 41 points in 67 games for Metallurg, which I think is pretty impressive, right? Like the KHL is not a developmental league. They don't pay much attention or interest in developing prospects. That's what the VHL and the MHL are for. And they also don't really give a lot of love to players who aren't sticking around. You can tend to find players having a hard time finding ice when it's pretty publicly known that when their contract expires, they're coming to North America. So I don't know if he kept those cards close to the vest, because 41 points in 67 games is pretty good. He's got size as well. He's 6'2", 190 pounds, and he's only got a 37% Fantrax rostership. And I got to think that that number's got to come up now that he's out of Russia and coming over to play for the Marlies. I think this is a player you should look at adding on your fantasy roster while you can, if he's available in some of your leagues. Victor, you got some stats to talk about with him, or some analytics?
Yeah, you know me. Of course I do. And yeah, I do like this guy. And you mentioned some of the reasons why, there might have been some monkeying with his time on ice. I definitely think that there was. And I wrote about this back in, I think, May on EP Ringside. So you could read on it. It's called The Russians Are Coming. And as you alluded to, Russians who say they're going to leave for North America get their KHL ice time cut. It's just a known fact, and they don't want to give them the opportunity. I think that this context really helps an illustrate how impressive Grabrionkin's season was, because he had the eighth most time on ice, eighth most, and the 13th most power play time on ice. And despite basically burying him in the bottom six there, he was able to finish second on his KHL team for points, 41 points in 67 games. That's absurd. Like, that's really incredible. You look at his per 60 numbers, and it's pretty outrageous considering how limited his opportunity was. That trailed off a bit in the postseason. Not terribly surprising. The team's going to be a bit better. It's going to be harder to do that. So, I think that that's all pretty important to kind of keep in mind. So I think all of that has a lot of context to do with why they how much more excited you should be about Gabronkin. And this was not some Joe Schmo team. This is a team that won the Gargan Cup, Metallurg Magnitogorsk. So that's all pretty super impressive. The track record is there. Looking at his hockey prospecting, you're going to be a little bit more disappointed, because mostly he looks like kind of a lot of replacement level guys. And one guy that he looks a little bit like is Kevin LeBanc, who had a hot minute of relevance in the NHL and then kind of faded away. So hopefully Grabrionkin is more than that. I think he will, because he's already shown really strong play in a strong professional league. He might only be in that 55 to 65 point range, but still, I think that it's worth it. Plus, the Leafs are going to need guys like this that can contribute on entry level contracts. And you look at his peripheral coverage, and it's not bad. He's not amazing at block shots and hits, but he's well above average in pretty much all the categories, including blocks. He's actually pretty decent. So I think that's all goes to show that this is a guy who, yeah, you should be excited about. And I agree. I'm confused why people aren't more excited about him as a Leafs prospect. Typically, you find you have to quell the excitement a little bit. But here it's like, I don't hear enough about him, and I think people should be talking about Grabrionkin more.
All aboard the hype train. Doot, doot. All right. Let's move on. The next team we're going to talk about, St. Louis Blues. They rank 15th, and their top prospects, Jimmy Snuggerud, scored an 8.1, which is a pretty good ranking. Dilibor Dvorsky, a 7.8. Joel Hofer, Zach Bolduc, Otto Stenberg round out the top five. And Theo Lindstein and Scott Perunovich and Zach Dean. So they've got players who are all scoring over five, all the way down through eight, which is pretty rare for teams in this score range, this ranking range. So, they've got some pretty good depth there. I like a lot of those players. And then it kind of starts to drop off pretty hard just around the 10 range. Michael Buchinger, Nikita Alexandrov, Juraj Parasek, Vadim Zarenko, Tyler Tucker, Quentin Burns, and so on and so forth. So the first guy we should talk about here, Victor, I think, is Vadim Zarenko. He scored a 7.5. Sorry, he scored a 3.4, my bad. And he's their 12th ranked prospect. He got high scores from riders of 7.5 from Pat and a 6 from Dauber, and then low scores of 4 from Ben, Hayden, Mark, and Victor. You scored him a 3. He didn't make my list. Neither did Curtis or Panit rank him at all. So apparently, I need to know more about Vadim Zarenko. He is a 6'4", 23-year-old goalie drafted 7th round in 2019. He now has 2 AHL seasons under his belt in Springfield with a career stat line of 22, 23, and 4. His goals against average is .333 and a .908 save percentage. Meh, those are pretty vanilla stats. He was supposed to be starting goalie last season in Springfield with Joe Hofer graduating, but he ended up splitting time with Malcolm Subban, who turns out to not be an NHL goalie. Subban does not have an NHL contract, and there's little prospect competition in the St. Louis Blues system currently for Zarenko. So it's a little bit promising looking at the opportunity that he has. You know, he's 23 years old. He's going to need a couple more seasons in the American Hockey League. The St. Louis Blues goaltending tandem is pretty set with Binnington and Hofer right now, so there's no opportunity for him immediately. So the crease should be his in the American Hockey League, and his biggest competition is coming from a guy that doesn't have an NHL contract. So you'd think that the Blues would have a lot more motivation and interest to give Zarenko all the starts he can handle. So we'll see where this goes with him, Victor. I know that Dauber's pretty keen on him. He spoke highly of him in the guide. You scored him as a 3, so you're not much more enthusiastic about him than I am. But what's your thoughts on Zarenko? Are we both kind of sleeping on this guy, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I know that Dauber always likes the guys that are close, and he certainly seems close. I mean, he's been in the AHL for most of the last 2 seasons, and so that typically does afford guys an opportunity because if I mean that's how Binning no one ever thought Jordan Binnington was going to be, a really great goalie. He didn't have that much pedigree, but then when the opportunity arose and he was put in the spot and he did well, and that can happen even to the Even to someone who doesn't have much hype behind them. I will say he does have, a reasonable equivalency. He's kind of been in the low 30s to high 20s on hockey prospecting. It's kind of hilarious, actually, that one of his main comps is Jordan Binnington. So maybe he could be about like that kind of starter. He also has a bunch of guys that are replacement level or below. So, there's also that. I talked about him with Kat Silverman, and I was looking back at my notes on that. And one thing she noted is that he has a lot of tools, but seems to be a bit of a wild card. And sometimes his save selection can be questionable, which, as you ascend in levels and get face better and better shooters, that can become more and more of a problem. So, yeah, I'm just not super sure about him. He is a goalie that is close to being NHL ready, though. So sometimes it's just nice to take a chance on those guys because it doesn't take much once they're there, especially playing so many games. There's sometimes guys who get, a handful of games in the AHL, maybe they get sent to the ECHL. That wouldn't qualify as someone I'd be as excited about, but he played 29 games in the AHL last season. It wasn't great, but it was seemed somewhat decent. So, yeah, I'm trying to be more optimistic, Pete, but I'm just not. He is a guy who's there.
Right. Well, another St. Louis Blues prospect that I'm trying to be optimistic about because he's a Kingston Frontenac, and you seem to be more keen on him than I am, is Quentin Burns. He ranked 14th. He scored a 1.7 overall. He got low scores of 2 and 3 from Ben and Pinit and me. I think I scored him a 3, and he was not ranked by 5 riders. You scored him as a 5. Now, I see a lot of Quentin Burns here in Kingston, and I like him a lot, but I don't see a lot of offensive upside in his game at all. They've tried to have him run the power play a couple times, and it's just not particularly effective. Not only with his lack of offensive upside will it not translate into fantasy either, It'll make it hard for Burns to move up to the NHL level. He'll have to be dynamic defensively and physically. And that's possible. Those are his calling cards for sure. So any value derived from Burns will come from peripheral stats. He has one more year of junior, though. He's eligible to return as a senior to the Frontenacs. So we'll see if he can find some offensive upside. And that happens sometimes, right? Like we see guys get drafted because they're big and they're physical, but not very dynamic offensively. But as they, mature in the junior level, they're leaned on for more ice time and get more deployment and start to have a lot more confidence, and their skill level develops as they go. And NHL teams send them back, I'm guessing, with the mandate to, why don't you try? Like, we know you're good defensively. That's why we drafted you. Let's see what you can do offensively. So we'll see if he can develop that side of his game. I'm not saying it's totally empty, but it needs some work. So what's your take on Quentin Burns, Victor?
Well, I think it might have been slightly a mistake. I'm not sure because I went back and looked and tried to figure out why I gave him that, and I don't really understand. So he does have, some of his equivalencies are not horrible, but I don't know that it's worth a five. Probably more like a four. I think if I had to re-rank him, probably be a three or four, which would be pretty in line with where you guys had him. And overall, his average score still isn't anything to be excited about. That looking at his comps, these are guys like Nate Schmidt at best. The ones on the NHL ranking are all guys you've basically never heard of. So yeah, I really doubt it. And like you said, periffs, but really it's only the hits. The hits are really the only thing that are substantial. The shots are non-existent and the blocks are below average. So I don't think that even that is going to be something that holds him up. So, sometimes this is good. It's like a quality control. Why did you like Quinn Burns? Well, I don't know. So I guess I didn't like him as much as I thought. And sometimes, when you're doing a million of these rankings, you miss something. One thing I can tell you for sure is that he is not related to Brent Burns, which would make this a whole lot more exciting.
No, he's not related to Brent Burns. He's a Smiths Falls native. All right, so that's a couple players from the Blues. Up next is the 14th. We're getting into the bottom or the top half, whichever way you want to do it. New Jersey Devils. Their score was an 82.2, and their top-ranked player was Luke Hughes, 8.7, followed very closely by Simon Nemec, 8.7, so 8.8 and 8.7. And then Alexander Holtz, who's no longer with the Devils, was 7.4, and Seamus Casey scored a 7. And then it starts to drop off after the top five, Nico Daws, Arseni Gritsik, Akira Schmid, also no longer with New Jersey. Lenny Hamanaho, Graham Clark, also no longer with New Jersey. Nolan Foote, Kevin Ball, also no longer with New Jersey. They've really purged three or four of their top prospects, and one or two more of them are going to graduate this year. So this time next year, it'll be interesting to see what the New Jersey Devils prospect rankings look like, because it's going to be quite different than when we ranked these just a couple months ago now. So picked a couple of guys here to talk about, Victor, that are still with the organization. Lenny Hamanaho, very interesting, ranked 8th, and his score was 5.4. His high scoring r scores were sixers or sevens from yourself, Pat, Ben, and Mark, and he got low scores from myself and Hayden. So I'm not so hot on Hamanaho. He was drafted last year, I believe. What do I need to know about Lenny, Victor?
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
Yeah, I am interested in him, and he's a 2023 58th overall pick. He's 6 foot 176 pound right shot right wing. He was pretty old for the draft class last year, and that allowed him to play a lot of Liga games. He pretty much played entirely in the Liga last season, 51 games, and had 21 points there. So that was all really nice. And this season, he was able to bump that up, 31 points in 46 games for Asat, and another 6 points in 12 playoff games. He also was with them for the U20 World Championship. And overall, Finland wasn't great, but he was definitely pretty good, one of their better players, I would say. So that was really nice to see a strong performance there, 6 points in seven games. I actually wrote about him for EP Ringside, talking about the strong finish performers for some of the prospects. And yeah, I think that he really has kind of bumped his stock up. I guess the big thing about him is that he's got a good shot. He's a pretty decent playmaker, but he is a little bit slow at, not the fastest guy. I think that was part of the reason why he slid into a little bit later of a pick. But he's got some pretty good hockey sense about him, and he kind of showed that he can play in a really difficult league. I mean, Finland, that's a really low scoring league, and to score, well over
Yeah.
half point per game as a teenager is pretty solid, I would say. And looking at his equivalencies, I mean, he's not looking so good in the hockey prospecting model. I think a lot of that is due to his draft minus one season, which wasn't a super high equivalency, but he has been bumping it up year by year. He kind of looks in this model like Erik Haula, who is, had some flashes of relevance, but overall more of like an average to replacement level producer. And he does have a decent peripheral floor. He kind of hits and blocks a little bit, shoots a fair amount. So he's probably more like a 60th percentile for those metrics. So he's not someone that's like going to blow the doors off. But as you mentioned, a lot of the guys above him got cleared out. So there's a little bit more opportunity for him. And he's been playing professionally, so looking at elite prospects, it says he's going to be in the Liga for one more year. But he's someone that I could see coming over in like a year, or maybe at the end of this Liga season and have some relevance really quickly, because he's already shown that pro readiness, which is really nice to see. So yeah, he's someone I think it's worth, if someone like him who could be like a 55 to 65 point player, if that's someone with a decent perifs, is that's an interesting player in your league, then you should probably have some interest in Hamanaho. What do you think, Pete?
All right, I could see the appeal there. Yeah, I can see the appeal. I was curious about what his ETA would be. And yeah, I think you're right. I seem to recall him having one more season this upcoming year under contract, but Liga ends a little bit earlier than the NHL does. So he could, and this would be promising as he comes over at the end of the season and has a cup of coffee in the American Hockey League in Albany, I think is their affiliate. It keeps changing. I can't keep up.
Utica, I think.
Yeah, right. It's Utica now. All right. So that's Lenny. Good to know you, Lenny. Let's move on and talk about Nolan Foote. He scored 10th, once a blue chip prospect. His score was 3.5. So he is trending down hard, like down like an anchor, like the New York Stock Exchange today. He scored fives or sixes from myself, Curtis, Aaron, and Hayden, and twos from Puneet. And he was not rated by Victor or Ben. No love for the foot. So Victor, why don't you tell me why? I mean, we've talked about him before, and he's a pretty well-known prospect. He was a prolific scorer in the WHL and looked really great for Team Canada at the World Juniors as well. His American Hockey League stats have been good. He just can't crack the NHL. I think because of his speed. Both foot and processing speed, I think, are the reasons that are keeping him outside the NHL, and those are going to be difficult for him to overcome at this stage now. But I would love to get your thoughts on why he wasn't ranked.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd love to know that too. No, I'm just kidding. I was thinking, and at first I was like, maybe I confused him with Calfoot. And Calfoot, for those of you that have been following along, has been involved with the Hockey Canada investigation from the 2018 team. So that is, and they're both Devils now. For a while, one of them was with
Tampa.
the Tampa, yeah, which was not Nolan. That was Cal. Anyway, so that might have been part of it, but I think also the other part is that he didn't play basically all of last season. And as you said, I think the other big reason is that he has really just not been able to stick in the NHL. 23 NHL games played over 4 seasons. And yeah, the Devils have been kind of competitive, but their competitiveness has been up and down over the last 4 years. And we have seen some other players pass him, like notably Dawson Mercer, Alex Holtz got a role. We've seen some of these other guys, you know, kind of breeze right past him. And, you know, even McLeod, who's also involved in that investigation, but he did a little bit as well before this all happening. So I think that's kind of the issue, is that he just kind of seems like he's stuck like a tweener, you know, and that, yeah, he seems very productive in the AHL, but get him in the NHL and it just doesn't seem to happen for him. And I think that's kind of where he's going to live. You look at his equivalency and it has basically just trended down, down, down since his draft year. He started at like 72 PNHLE and he's now in the 40s. And I think that's kind of who he is. Like if he even sticks, which at this point seems unlikely that he will, he's probably like a 30 to 40 point guy without too much upside. I think he's solidly a bottom six forward, if anything, in the NHL. So that's just not someone I have too much interest in, unfortunately.
Sell, sell, sell. All right, 13th ranked team coming up, and that is the Seattle Kraken. Kind of developing a bit of an affinity for Seattle and their scouting. And here's why. They scored a 76.2, and their top prospects are Shane Wright, scored an 8. The Furkus Circus scored a 7.4. Ryker Evans, we scored him 7.1. David Goyette and Edward Schall cleaned up the top 5. And then it doesn't really start to drop off. You still got guys scoring 5 through the next top 9 with Carson Rakoff, Ty Nelson, Yanni Newman, and Lukas Dragicevic. Ty Cart, a 4.8. We're going to talk about that. Oscar Fisker-Molgaard, a 4.7. So you got guys at 11 who are just below a 5 score. And then Caden Price, Ryan Winterton, Nicholas Cocho, and Logan Morrison, a 2.2, is the lowest ranked player. And we're going to talk about that as well. So first up, Ty Cart, the 10th, or Carte, Carty, Cart, scored a 10.
I think it's Cartier.
Cartier. I had 3 shots and couldn't get it right. So he scored a 4.8 and ranked 10th. He got high scores of 7 from yours truly and Victor and the only other smart guy here, Hayden. Everyone else scored him low as a 4 or lower. Pat and Curtis and Aaron and Panit. Panit is on the not ranked repeat list here. I don't know. Did he only like score 5 guys per team? Because we seem to be saying Panit didn't rank our guys a lot. So here's my take on Cartier. I was surprised by the low scores here, Victor. Like, really surprised. I mean, this is a player who last year, which was his rookie season, he was really good in the American Hockey League. It was his rookie pro season last year. And by last year now, I guess I mean 2 years ago. No, just last year. Yeah, like I said, he was really good in the American Hockey League. He was scoring very well. And, you know, okay, so their Coachella Valley, it was their initial season, and or they're very young, so they had a lot of veterans, not a lot of young prospects. So I imagine the ice time with veteran players would be difficult to come by. But he still scored, and he scored well enough to get a recall to the National Hockey League and finish the season with Seattle in the playoffs and scored 5 points in 10 games. That's a really strong indication right there that he could make the team full time last season. And he did exactly that, right? Like, that's something that a little tip for fantasy leaguers out there. Watching the NHL playoffs is really important for next season's draft, especially, you know, obviously not if it's just entry level draft guys, but if you're doing like a top 5 keeper and then you have a redraft, or if your league's not too deep that you have prospects. You can really glean some valuable information for next season about what prospects are ready to not only make the team, but contribute. And you see guys like Cartier having a really impactful playoff and a deep run, or the way Matthew Nyes looked in his rookie season after he signed and played in the playoffs with the Leafs. He was, you know, he started off by being a black ace to being a bench warmer and ended up in the series being a top 6 player. Like, in the playoffs, that's really impressive. So back to Cartier. He played a full 77 games last season and scored 20 points, but most impressively, he led Seattle in hits with 229. His Fantrax roster ship is still also on the low side of 57%. So, you know, anyone around 50% is I consider it to be low for anyone in listening to this podcast, you're in dynasty leagues. So this is a player who's potentially available in your dynasty league, and I don't think should be. I'd like to see that number climb up, and I suspect it will as we get closer to the season and drafts start to fill up. The Dauber Fantasy Guide, which if you've never purchased it, wake up and get it. It's just available now. It's updated. I mean, it's out early, yeah, but he updates it all the way through the season. There's a mid-season guide that he releases too. So right now, he's got him projected to be a fourth liner, so making the team on a regular basis, and he's got him for 13 goals and 31 points. And he's going to have you a truckload of hits as well. So I think he's a player that's particularly fantasy relevant in deep dynasty and banger leagues. And I was really surprised by his low score. Victor, I think you and I are again ahead of the curve on this one. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. It's nice to think that. I'm a little worried about his role this upcoming season just because he did have, he did really well in that limited role that he had. I'm just not sure how much of that is going to continue with who they have kind of filling out their roster. But, he did show a lot of really solid play, particularly with that long playoff run. And in the AHL. So I think that he's gonna be there. It's just a matter of whether he can push himself into the top six or not. But I think, part of my ranking was how sure he is to be an NHLer. And there is some peripheral floor there, which is nice. He's gonna get the ice time though. That's my biggest question. And I'm not sure about that. I always One of the things that has always been kind of annoying about Seattle from a fantasy perspective is that they spread their ice time so much around. They kind of evenly distribute it. And that was definitely the past coach. And so, we'll have to see how that changes under the new regime. Hopefully that'll be different and they'll give guys more opportunity. But Cartier in his NHL experience has been pretty defensively solid. And so hopefully that strong, two-way play earns him a little bit more ice time than what he had previously, because it seems like he should deserve a little bit more. So I'm hoping that that's the case.
All right. And the other player I alluded to that we talk about with Seattle is my boy Logan Morrison. And I believe we've talked about him a couple times on this show before. He scored a 2.2, which was disappointing, but not surprising. He got high scores of 5 from just you and me, and low scores of 3 from Curtis, Aaron, and Hayden. And he was not ranked by Pat, Ben, or Mark. So a couple of three guys didn't even rank him at all. So, like I said, we've talked about Morrison before on previous episodes, and especially when we had the Seattle scout on there, Chris McDonald. He is so underrated that it's not even funny anymore. I mean, so this is a player that had 100 points in his junior season in the Ontario Hockey League and led Hamilton, his senior season, actually, and led Hamilton to a OHL championship with 100 points, and then he had 39 points in 19 playoff games. So that's 2 points a game in the playoffs, carried them to the Memorial Cup, and I think they lost it by like one goal. So and then he comes back, he plays another season in the Ontario Hockey League as an overager because he's never drafted, he's not signed, and he gets traded to Ottawa, and he takes them deep in the playoffs as well and has another great season. So what's the yeah, but with this player, right? Like, yeah, he's great, but. So what is that? Well, he went undrafted through the NHL draft, like I said. I think mainly due to some skating issues. He's not undersized, he's average size, he's about 6 feet tall. The issues, I think, have been satisfied in my opinion. And his rookie year in the so Seattle signed him to a contract, should mention that. And last year was his rookie season at the pro level. And he played in the American Hockey League, and it was a success. 41 points in 64 games, and he continued to be a playoff producer as well with 10 points in 18 Calder Cup playoff games. So they went deep. And again, that's as a rookie on a veteran roster in Coachella. So he does lack pedigree, right? Like he's not played internationally for Canada. He went undrafted through three drafts. No one wanted him, but he just keeps improving and trending towards the NHL. Victor, I think we're way ahead of the curve on this player. His 22% Fantrax rostership really needs to be much higher. I think he is a potential great value add as a free agent or a waiver claim in your dynasty league. What do you think about him?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to pat ourselves on the back. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. Yeah, I so feel the pat on your back. I think that he is someone who, yeah, absolutely, like that percentage should be lower, and why not take a chance? I mean, there's it's kind of like Seattle, free money here if he ends up, being someone who can translate to the next level. We haven't fully seen that yet, but he hasn't really gotten the opportunity, and what he has gotten professionally has been great. Most of his equivalencies look kind of a little bit low, like the PNHLE is like in the mid-40s. The hockey prospecting, most of the guys look like replacement level guys, but actually Troy Terry is someone he actually looks a little bit like, a little bit better than Troy Terry, actually, who's pretty relevant in most leagues. Actually, there's a Chris Drury comp in here too. So there you go. There's some guys that are pretty relevant. I mean, but mostly his numbers are pretty on the low end. His NHLer probability has pumped up quite a bit, but it's just the actual star potential that's a little bit on the lower side. But I absolutely agree in terms of, like, this is not someone I'd be ranking as like super high, but he's in the why not take a chance range, because there's a better chance than what most people are giving him credit for, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the kind of player and the reason why people listen to this podcast, I think, to find out about guys like this. Not saying he's going to be the next Wayne Gretzky, and he does have some challenges to get in on the Seattle roster. But they have a pretty deep roster at the NHL level. There's not a lot of jobs available there, and there's some pretty tough competition ahead of him that have the pedigree that he lacks, right? Shane Wright, Jagr Furkus, David Goyette, Carson Rakoff. Like, it's gonna be difficult for him to pass those guys on the depth chart, but he just keeps getting better and he just keeps producing, man. All right, so let's go on to our last team for this episode. We're down to the into the inside the top 12, and that would be the Nashville Predators, and their score was 75.2. So their prospect rankings has Yaroslav Askarov at the top. Of course, 8.7 was his score, quite high. We're keen on him. And then Joachim Kamel is a 7.1. And then Luke Evangelista, Matthew Wood, Tanner Molendijk, Zachary Leroux rank out the top six. Fedor Svechkov scores a 5.8. Ryan Ufko, 5.7. So we're starting to see the higher numbers go a little deeper on the depth chart in the rankings as we get lower and lower and closer to the top ranked teams. Rounding out the top 10, you've got Juuso Parsonen, Kalen Lind, Felix Nilsson, Reid Schaefer, Adam Ingram, and Spencer Stastny, 15th ranked, scores a 1.9. Let's start there. Spencer Stastny, I got to be in my bonnet again about this one. So the high scores for him were fives from Hayden, a four from me, and a four from Dauber. And he got low scores of either twos or threes from Curtis or Aaron, and he was not ranked by Victor, Pat, Ben, Mark, and Puneet. So not ranked by so many players really made it hard for his average score to be anything higher than a one or a two. So he's a really polarizing player with a wide range of scores. And I'm guessing here, I'll ask you why you didn't rank him, Victor, but I'm guessing he was kind of overlooked due to his advanced age, 24 years old. I know you're an ageist. A 2018 fifth round pick. He's played full 4 year term in the NCAA. He had 63 points in 143 career games. He's a defenseman for anyone who's not totally familiar with him. He's played two seasons now, splitting time in the American Hockey League and the National Hockey League, and he's been playing well, 44 points in Milwaukee. 44 games in Milwaukee with 20 points and a plus 27. He's played 20 NHL games, including a 14 game stretch to end the year, which included three games in the playoffs. Remember, I mentioned how important playing in the playoffs was? Well, here we go again. He is, I'm certain, NHL ready. So his certainty of making the NHL is high. In the prospect report, Ben ranked his certainty as a 70%, but his upside as low as it could go at 10%, which I think is fair. From the report, here's what Ben had to say about our boy Stastny here, Spencer Stastny. He did only okay in terms of his play, driving, and sheltered role over the 20 games, and does not have an inspiring profile, even dating back to his national team development program and college days. At 24 years old, the Admirals' fifth highest scoring defender is not exactly demanding another call up. If he resigns in Nashville, when he wrote that, by the way, this was in the summer, and he was an RFA, which he has signed in Nashville. If he resigns in Nashville and an opportunity opens up, like the recent trade of Ryan McDermott, his role could grow into a bottom pairing, sheltered, shutdown D-man as early as this fall. So all those things have really come into fruition. So that's what we're looking at with this player going forward. I think he's got NHL upside, if not fantasy upside. The problem here is the depth in Nashville. The top four is set. Josi, Carrier, Shea, and Lauzon. And then you've got Fabbro and Shen rounding out the top six defense. And I think Fabbro and Shen are quite usurpable. Lots of opportunity there. And then not to mention any injuries that they might run into. However, I think the biggest problem for Stastny is his prospect competition. It includes the likes of Nick Blankenberg now. We've talked about him. He's come over from Columbus, and we're both kind of high on, not high, but we're kind of warm on the whole Nick Blankenberg experience. They've got Jack Mathieu and Jake Livingstone as well, who's another college free agent, and some younger guys who are going to pass him over in a few years when they're ready. But then the biggest challenge is going to be Ryan Ufko as well. So let's start with your take on Spencer Stastny here, Victor. You didn't have him ranked. Is it because he's too old for your interest in fantasy? Or is it because he doesn't have offensive upside?
Can it be both? Both things can be true. I think both things are true, quite frankly. I mean, like you said, he's already there. I mean, he's already played some NHL games. He's looked fine at the AHL level, but it does he have upside, is I think the question. So, if you want someone if he's someone that in your league, it's just valuable to have a guy who's playing on an entry level contract and providing you any amount of stats, then he's someone to look at because he has, he could be a bottom pairing guy, but does he score more than like a 20-point pace? I don't really think so. He also doesn't really have much peripheral value. Like his blocks are pretty good, but the rest are not really there. So, I don't really think that he's going to be someone that's super valuable. He kind of seems like a kind of guy that, yeah, you mentioned Ufko, who I'm really high on. He seems like guys that other defensemen are just going to pass, along the way and have passed in terms of their how likely they are to be impact players in the NHL. So that I think, certainty, sure, but like in terms of upside and relevance, he seems like he'll just be replacement level or worse.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I didn't score him a seven or anything. I scored him as a four. So I think he's less than 50-50 to be, well, I'd raise that now because I think he is an NHL player. I just don't really like the offensive upside. So he's got to really bring up his peripheral stat game. I think it's also important to note that he's not related to any of the Stastny brothers, in case you were wondering. So I think a player who's got a little bit more offensive upside doesn't have the same size, but some more offensive upside is Ryan Ufko. He ranked eighth, so much higher in our rankings. He scored a 5.7. His biggest fans are a seven from Pat, Curtis, and Ben, and Victor, you scored him as a four. I was more of a detractor. Myself and Aaron, we scored him at four. So why are you higher on Ryan Ufko than I am? And I think I even rostered him in one of my leagues. So make me feel good about having him on my roster.
Well, I don't know what there is to not like about Ryan Ufko, other than he's 5'10". That's I guess the big knock point against him. When he was drafted, there was not only the fact that he was a little bit on the smaller side, but his skating wasn't amazing, and some of his defensive two-way game was a little bit questionable. But he has since really worked all that out and come a long way to the point where he's been. He was the captain at UMass and put in all situations and played really difficult minutes. So he was fantastic for UMass this season. He had 10 goals and 26 points for UMass as their captain. And that was the third best on the team behind fellow defenseman Scott Mauro and Jack Musa. So that was pretty great. And just as proof of concept, he got some AHL games for Milwaukee. And after the UMass was eliminated in the NCAA tournament, and he had 6 points in 9 regular season games and then 10 in 15 playoff games. This is his first taste of AHL action. And I would say he hit it square out of the park. So I don't think that pro translation is going to be a problem for UFCO. This is something that we've kind of been wondering because he's looked better and better throughout his college experience. And then it's like, okay, yeah, but how's he going to look in the AHL? Well, it turns out, at least the early reports, I mean, this isn't like a huge sample size, but it's 24 total games, which is not nothing. He looked fantastic. His equivalencies in hockey prospecting look phenomenal, like 42% chance of being a star. And his PNHLE is approaching 60. It's like in the mid 50s. So all that looks really good. His peripheral coverage doesn't look amazing, but he looks like 80th percentile for shots, 70th for hits, and 50 for blocks. So there's a decent peripheral floor there. It really just depends on how much time on ice he gets. I kind of see him more as like a second or third pairing guy with hopefully second power play would kind of be the ideal situation. So that's not like incredible, but I think that there's a pretty solid floor here. And depending on how he develops professionally, I think, there's a chance to be, that middle pairing guy with pretty decent time on ice and, could have some pretty good, at least even strength production. So yeah, I'm really excited about Ryan Ufko. I think he has answered a lot of questions, and I think people keep asking me, why are you high on Ufko and other people aren't? I think it's really hard sometimes for people to change their mind once you've kind of seen a guy be a really late draft pick and not necessarily have early on some of those translatable factors, but I think he has worked so hard on them and that they've really, I think he's answered all those questions. And I don't know what else there is to answer, Pete, other than I guess be in the NHL, which he's right there. He's right there.
Yeah, I've seen him play a couple times now, and he's got some dynamic offensive upside. I'll give you that. I'm starting to regress a little bit in my thinking in terms of size for defensemen. I've been saying, oh, you don't measure prospects with a you don't s score prospects with a tape measure or whatever the saying Craig Button said was. And I was all on board with that, but I think NHL teams are kind of leaning more towards size. Size really does matter. A little bit more. So hopefully I'm wrong. And 5'10" isn't like Bilbo Baggins small or anything here. So it's doable. I'm rooting for him because, like I said, I roster him in one of my leagues. So let's go, oof, go. All right, moving on to the last team we're going to talk about today, the Calgary Flames coming in at 11, scoring 74.6. Dustin Wolf is their top-ranked prospect. No surprise, he's going to be their starting goalie this year. They cleaned house in front of him, so it's his crease now. Matt Coronato is and Connor Zary are, I think, are both graduated prospects as well, scoring at just under 8. And then at 4, you've got Jacob Peltier at 7.1. So 6.8 for Samuel Honzonk at 5 makes their top 5 prospects almost all a 7 or higher, which is pretty good. And then moving on down below that, they acquired Hunter Buscevich. He scored as a 5.9. Jeremy Poirier, Etienne Morin, Martin Pospisil, and Adar Suniev round out their top 5, 10, I should say. And then the last 5 guys are Rory Karens, Jan Kuznetsov, Cole Schwindt, Topi Roine, and Ilya Solovyov. So, Victor, I think two players we're going to talk about here would be Martin Pospisil, a guy I kind of want to talk about, and Adar Suniev, a guy I want to hear your thoughts on. So let's start with the ninth ranked Pospisil. He scored a 4.8. Now, I've been a fan of this guy for a few years now. I've kind of liked his game quite a bit. He got high scores of 6 from Pat Hayden and Panit, and he got low scores of 4 from Dauber, Aaron, Mark, and Ben. I scored him a 5, Victor, and you scored him a 3. So clearly I'm higher on him than you are. I think he's going to graduate from the prospect rankings this year. I see him as an established NHLer at this point already, albeit maybe a depth player and a fantasy multi-cat player that brings the heat, who could put up 100 plus points, sorry, 100 plus penalty minutes. That's more like it. 200 plus hits. And in terms of points, I could see him scoring anywhere in the next couple of seasons between 20 to 40 points if things go really well for him. My red flag on this guy, though, Victor, is the injuries. He's a bit of a band-aid boy. He's moved up to 65% Fantrax roster ship, which I don't think is egregiously low, but I think it's a little low considering he can be such a valuable multi-category guy. Now, he's also a bit of a pest as well, which I can be fond of. So I think that's the good news on Martin Pospisil, with a little bit of red flag warning on the injuries. I scored him a 5, you scored him a 3. Why were you a little bit cooler on him, Victor? I mean, at the time we ranked this, he was kind of playing in the NHL.
My rating is more based on the fact that I think he is what he is. So if you like what you saw, I think he can continue that. I think he's probably not going to get more than, 12 to 14 minutes, and he's going to hit everything in sight and get a lot of penalty minutes. And so if that's good for you, then if that's what he did in the 63 games this past season is something that is valuable in your league, I think he can continue to do that. I don't know that there's much growth or ability to improve beyond that. So and that's fine. Yeah, like that's he is who he is. And it just if you're thinking that he could suddenly develop some more scoring or something like that, I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I'll also point out that the points that he did score, he got more goals than he ex than were expected for him. So his expected goals were much lower than his actual goals. So I mean, he only had 8, but you regress that by a few, and then all of a sudden the 31-point pace looks a lot less exciting. And that's probably where he is, like a 25-point guy with a ton of hits and a ton of pims. And the blocks aren't terrible either for a forward, especially the amount of time on ice he's getting. So yeah, he is what he is. And if that's good for you, then that's good. I just, don't think that there's much more beyond that. I guess maybe the certainty would allow him to be ranked a little bit higher. Maybe I should have adjusted based on the certainty and just not the upside.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess I'm higher on him because the leagues that I'm in are all multi-cat head-to-head leagues. So, he's going to fill two or three of the categories on a nice level contract as well. So, he's extremely valuable in those leagues for those reasons. But if you're in a points only league, then I'd have to pass hard on Pospisil. Thanks, but no thanks. All right. So, our next guy we want to talk about here is the 10th ranked player on Calgary, Adar Suniev, scored a 4.5. He got high score marks from you, Victor, a 6, as well as Aaron, Ben, and Panit. So we found a player that Panit likes. He got low scores of 3 from Dauber and Mark, and he was not rated by Pat, and he was not rated by me. So obviously, I'm sleeping behind the wheel on Adar Suniev. So tell me why you like him so much.
Well, I was going to say earlier, maybe the reason the only guys Panit likes are the WHL guys, because that's his area, and that may or may not be true. But I know that Suniev was in the BCHL, so maybe WHL adjacent or in that kind of territory.
We're gonna have to
But
have Pinny on the show to defend himself soon now.
yeah, explain yourself.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Suniev, I mean, he's a really interesting case. So, I mean, he's from Russia, but he's been in North America for years now. And when you hear him talk, he does have a bit of an accent, but his English is incredible. Like he was at St. Andrew's College and in the BCHL for the season before that. So yeah, he's been around, and he was in the BCHL in his draft season, put up a ton of points, almost 2 points per game, which is kind of what you need to do to get drafted in that league. And he did, and then he transitioned to the NCAA, and it was really good. 25 points in 36 games for UMass is nothing to sneeze at for a freshman. I think that some of his equivalencies look a little bit on the low end, but that's partially because his draft minus one in the BCHL just had such a low equivalency. I mean, he did okay, but it wasn't like amazing, and there wasn't an equivalency for St. Andrews. So anyways, I think that he does have some decent upside. I mean, he's not a small kid, 6'2", 198. And I think he's the kind of guy who could really surprise the next year or two in college. He's already done well, and I think that in a couple of years, he could step out of that program right into a decent role with Calgary. And so I think that that's something to be excited about. It's not, I don't know that he's gonna, I don't think 70 points is where he is, but I think he's someone who could probably hit 50, maybe 55, and kind of be that middle six winger, scoring winger. And so yeah, I think he's someone that people should be a little bit more excited about. And I think we have to wait and see how he does in college. But yeah, I think that people should be a little bit more into Adar Suniev than what I've seen currently. What do you think about that, Pete?
Yeah, I'm picking up what you're laying down. I mean, I'm looking at their top 15 prospects, and Wolf, Coronado, Zari, and Pelche, by my scorecard, are all going to graduate from the prospect ranks after this coming season. So that pretty much clears out four of the top five prospects here. So he's going to have a really good opportunity to move up the depth chart quite substantially if he can improve on or repeat his 25 points in 36 games at the college level as a sophomore. So yeah, I'm interested. I also like the fact that he's got some size. I like the big guys because, like I said, hits and penalty minutes, they all matter in my leagues. All right, so that pretty much wraps up the players we're going to talk about on this episode. We do have an important announcement to make, and I gotta say, it's a bittersweet. We're losing our producer, Evan Sabarin, who I think has, when you guys both came on and joined me on this podcast, it's really taken it to another level. And I'm feeling like an anchor sometimes holding you guys back, but you've both been such tremendous additions to this show. And I'm really sad to be losing a producer of Evan's abilities, but at the same time, I'm extremely happy for him. He's moving on because he's got a really good opportunity to work with the NFL in a production capacity there. So I'd just like to say congratulations, Evan. And I can't say how much I've appreciated all of your work on the podcast and having you on in some episodes and running your own division in the listener leagues, man.
Jesus, Pete, I didn't freaking know you're gonna make me cry on this last episode here. Jesus. Getting really dusty in here, man. Just got iced. But thank you guys. I can't thank you enough. And what a great opportunity it's been. I love this stuff, love doing it. And this was just a joy to be doing for this past year. Yeah, my life changes. Life comes at you fast, and looks like I have another opportunity has opened up that's gonna consume a lot of my time, but man, I'm gonna miss this stuff every week. And you guys have been great. Love talking hockey with you guys, and we'll always be in touch. So thank you guys.
Yeah, man, make sure you subscribe to the show.
Yeah, man, thanks so much, Evan. I really appreciate everything you've done for the show. I know a lot of people have commented how much better it sounds, and I know that you're a big part of that. So, great work, and yeah, we'll look forward to staying in touch with you.
Guys.
All right, everybody. So next episode, we're gonna have a new producer on, and we're just gonna wait and have a reveal with that for episode number 69 when we have Stephen Ellis on to talk about World Junior Summer Showcase. But for this episode, that's it. Thanks for listening to the show. Give us a follow on the socials, follow Hockey Pod Net, subscribe to that. There's lots of other good podcasts on there, and be like Evan, subscribe to the show, give us a 5-star review, tell all your friends all about us. That's it for this week, everybody. Thanks for listening and keep your stick on the ice.